From EDUCAUSE, and I'm here to convene a session about the study results from the students' perspectives and their expectations of mobile agility in higher ed. And the group that is here before you today was brought together originally by the Fry Institute in 2011. They participated in that, and that's the leading change institute now, and this project came out of that work. And today we have with us Diane Dusternhoff. Who's a librarian at St. Mary's University, and next to her is George Claffey Jr. He's the CIO from Charter Oak State College, and they've done some wonderful things there with the Distance Ed Consortium, and you'll get to hear a little bit about his experiences as he talks through this. And on the end there is Rosemary Rocchio from UCLA, and she's the director of the Educational and Collaborative Technology Group at UCLA's Office of Information Technology. We're really glad that you're here with us today. And with that, I'll turn this over to the group.
Thank you, Eden. She's a little taller than me. Okay, so we have the poll here. You could use your QR code or your just any mobile device that has a browser. So let's take a look at the results. Sure that we're gonna open up. Okay, so let's see. So we have a mix of folks here today, developers, technologists. All right, and then let's see. Most of you have two or three devices. Nobody had four or more, really? So anyway, those get heavy, don't they? So, okay, and then what type of devices? We were mostly, it looks like mostly iPhone, Android, and a couple of others. All right, well, very good. Back to the presentation. We're just kind of doing this to show you a little bit of similar questions to what we asked in the study, just to give you a little flavor for that. We used a totally different tool, actually, but we wanted to go through those questions. So a little bit about what is agility, flexibility, balance, adaptability, and coordination. All of these things have been around a really long time. Everybody strives to do them as well as they can in the business and the higher ed environment. And so we started thinking when we were at Fry, what is mobile agility? What does that mean? How do we keep pace with this rapidly moving space, consumerization of all of the things that have often been just sort of characterized as IT are now really in everybody's hand and walking around. And so how do we keep and leverage that interactivity that the students are walking into our campuses with and in a strategic way leverage that for their education? And Eden already mentioned we're part of the Fry Institute, and really what we were thinking about when we were there is how do we get a feeling for what's on the horizon? How do we get an understanding of where things are? And we all kind of have a feeling for it, but we thought we would really try to go back and ask the students, what did they think? Where are they with their perceived value? What do they want to see when they walk in the door? And so that's what we did. We said, okay, the four of us would from across the nation, actually four states, pretty diverse, small states, large states, some in the middle, some on the coast, and we decided that we would have a pretty good sampling across our team, so what we decided to do was a survey and then advertise it on our campuses, giving a prize of an iPad and with a random drawing that they could optionally put in their information for at the end of the survey. And, you know, the focus was really on understanding the trends and how students are expecting their campuses to interact with them for their education and for the business of working with the institution. A little bit about the data. We had 1,850 responses across the four institutions, and they actually represented 34 states. With students coming from those states. We had two research institutions and two teaching institutions. We had one private and one primarily that's fully online or almost entirely online. So we had a good mix, and we feel like that makes our data stronger. And over on on the other side of the screen, you can see that these are the names of the institutions. So we did have a few sprinkling of other students, but primarily the four. So our study design, we asked the questions in primarily five sections. The first was a little bit about demographics and tech profile, similar along the lines of what we asked you just a little bit ago. We focused on lecture and clicker as a section. We did another section on e-text, one on video, and then finally one on mobile applications, and really asking them questions along the lines of what was important to them and what were they satisfied with from what they're currently getting from their campuses. We did have to go through the IRB processes on each of our campuses, which was its own adventure, but we lived through it. And we also took our data and tried to slice it research versus teaching, looking at some part-time versus full-time, a little bit of the private versus public. One thing that we all really were sort of surprised at was that the data was actually pretty similar and heterogeneous. And I think that speaks to the larger consumer trend of the consumption models of the mobile technology. Okay, so a little bit about the data, or getting into the data now. We had 87.18% had a smartphone, so Android or Apple, but we had even higher percent had the phone. We had 90% said they had two devices that could touch the internet. And one of the surprising things, and we were a little bit surprised to find that more than half spend more than $50 a month on their mobile data. And that broke out a little more, showing the online institution with a spike there spending more along the lines of 70, 75 plus a month. But that's a trend we actually would have expected, given that these were the more of these students are adult. Okay, so just talking about the outliers, with the public institution showing up a little bit more in the center there than the part-time online. Okay, so we asked some questions like how many hours did they spend on their mobile device, and it was a spectrum, but 62% were more than 20 hours, which is quite a bit. And what used to be this is now this. The idea that really they're searching, they're doing a lot of things that they normally would have had to find other mechanisms. 88% said they use their devices to search the internet. More than a third use their phones for coursework. And as you can imagine, this is standing in line at the coffee shop. This is thinking about when is something due? And that's something that they're going to reach into their pocket. And even if it's a lot of pinching and scrolling, they're going to try to find out, you know, what is the pressing thing on their plate today. And there was a chunk that said, you know, rarely or never, but there was also a significant, there's several that actually said always. So 17.6 said always using my mobile device to get this kind of data. And so it's an interesting split there. It's almost perfect with the split there into five sections, but that's why we did some of this collecting to look at the data a little bit differently, saying, well, it's really in thirds of, you know, sort of like not so much sometimes and all the time, you know, almost all the time. Okay, so now we're going to move over and talk a little bit about lecture interactivity, students' impressions of that. And we had 48% of the students we surveyed had participated in interactive activities in their classroom. And almost half of those students had used a clicker device. That's as can be expected because the mobile, using your mobile phone for interactivity is sort of a new thing, but it is starting to get some attention, with 28% having tried it. And then we asked them, what do you do? What have you experienced? And it's quite a few different activities that they've tried. Anonymous polls being the highest, and that's sort of very common use case. But several, 43%, had taken attendance, had a professor taking attendance with these tools. A number of them had pop-up quizzes. A very small percent, but still more than I expected to find doing high-stakes exams with these devices, so 15%. We thought that was interesting. So 68% of those that responded felt the polls were interesting and kept them engaged. And that group, you know, felt that it was interesting. There were some said, you know, no, it was a distraction or so on, but it was an overwhelming positive response. And only 12% had used their mobile phone with some perhaps software or web-based tool like what we did just earlier to interact with their lecture questions. Okay, so buying Clicker apps, so mobile apps, say from a Clicker company, there was 29% that said they had done this. And primarily, this was something that was included in the course materials, with 71% on that. And then we did have a look and see if that was different across. This is one of the things that came out as a little bit different. And the teaching institutions seem to be a little more ahead on this curve, and research institutions less as far as buying the Clicker apps. Then we asked them how much money had they spent on these apps, and most of them said a very small amount. That was at just about 70%. But some, 14.5, said they spent more than $20. So that's something to think about. That software is expensive, and so that's something to consider. And this is just a breakout by campus of what that response was. But as you can see, most of the students spent on the very low end. We should have, actually, in retrospect, looking at this question, I wish we had pulled the zero as its own option and then, you know, 1 cent to four as its as a category. Preferred method of interacting. A lot of them said, well, we'd prefer the university provide us with the app. And however, the highest percentage was the 45% that have become comfortable with the Clicker, but not a majority. So let me ask, were there any negatives to using a Clicker in the classroom? And most said positive, and they felt that then a lot of them said with a contextual answer, well, it depends. And I'll get into some of those subjective responses in a little bit. But effectively, they overall felt that it was a positive thing and fairly engaging. So, and we asked them, did it increase their learning from their perspective? And some said it's too early to tell. Some said they didn't think so. And however, like almost 40% said yes, they felt they enjoyed it. Or perhaps they felt they had to prepare a little bit more, you know, going into the classroom. So I'm going to run through a few of the comments and just pull out a little bit of what they said. But overall, if you had to distill this all down to two words, it would be, it depends. And really, it depends on how the instructor or faculty is using the tool to keep them engaged and sort of on their toes. And some of them said that they appreciated it, but that, you know, it was something that they weren't sure everybody was comfortable with. And then some said that they felt it was good for them just because it was new technology and they wanted to get comfortable with it. And finally, we had a few other comments. One of them said this was kind of a little bit of a negative comment around not wanting to have to buy part of their grade, which came from my campus, but feeling that, you know, that the having to purchase the device was a difficult sort of thing for them. And then several of them really were saying that they feel like it is preparing them for that type of interaction. That was a similar one on that. I'll go back to that just for a second. So just feeling like that it's important for them to engage in this type of interaction. Okay, and that's just showing you the graph. 70% actually said no negatives, really. Okay, now we have a second poll. If you want to take this poll, we'll give you just a minute. Oh, sure. We have a question from online.
Data for the first one, because I don't know if she got a good scanner. She's having issues seeing it. I wanted to ask what
she wanted to take the first poll?
She said she didn't. She wasn't sure if she got a good scan because it asked for authentication.
Oh, it shouldn't. It's an open poll. See if she can do this one.
Okay.
Tell her to try this one. And then, or she could just go to that link that's here, and the first poll would be 453 on the end instead of that one. Okay. So we'll let people, I see some phones up, and let people scan to take this poll. So I'm going to introduce Diane Dusterhoff. And she's going to talk about the responses for the e-text section. And the first thing she'll do is open the results of the poll. Give people about another minute, I would say. Right. Okay, thank you.
Right. So isn't it appropriate the librarian gets to talk about e-texts? So. And I do want to say that in the survey, we actually asked about electronic textbooks, but it was clear from some of the responses that students didn't always limit their responses only to textbooks. So we'll take a look at the response. Where's the link?
Okay, another way to get there is to go to this online poll. Onlinepoll.ucla.edu and search mobile agility. Go there. And then this would be the link to your, we could just leave this up for George. Okay, so there you go. You can scroll down.
Okay, thanks, Rose. So interestingly, an overwhelming majority of this audience has viewed an e-text, which I would have expected. And when we asked some of the reasons why, and of course you could answer multiple responses here, the access of convenience, the carrying convenience, it's lighter weight than carrying a lot of heavy books around, the availability, cost, these are all considerations. And I think you'll see that when we look at the results from our students, that mirrors their responses as well. Okay, so just over half of the student respondents indicated that they had used an e-text, and in the examples we did say e-book, Nook, Kindle, iBooks, so we did open it up to a variety of platforms. Interestingly, we actually found that a slightly higher percentage of our students at our teaching institutions, that is Charter Oak College and St. Mary's University, had used e-texts as compared to the students at our research institutions, UCLA and the University of Missouri, Kansas City. We asked about the degree of interest in e-texts, and again, slightly more than half of our students were either very interested or interested in using e-texts. As we found before, the reasons that students like to use e-texts were the convenience and the more affordable costs. A few of the students indicated that it's required, and nearly 9% gave other reasons in our open-ended responses. And this breaks down the reasons why they chose the e-text. So you can see that 3/4 like the convenience and the affordability. And about 9% like the fact that they didn't have to worry about returning the book or having it be overdue if it were in a library context. So some of the themes that we saw emerge were that a number of students, particularly students from Charter Oak, indicated that they thought it was better for the environment to use an e-text. That was actually a response that they wrote in frequently. Again, they liked the instant access. There were a few students who indicated that it was the only option or that it came with the textbook that they were required to use. So sometimes they felt like they were kind of forced into using it. A few indicated that it had been a gift to them. One or two of our respondents said that it was for personal use and not for coursework. And several indicated they just wanted to try it out. They see it as a trend that's coming and they want to get on board. They also liked the functionality. They felt it was easier to take notes in and to bookmark pages. They don't have to worry about bookmarks getting lost in a physical book or falling out. And of course, one of the features they really like is the ability to easily search through the text. So here are a few quotes we pulled out. One of the students from St. Mary's said that it's with them everywhere as long as they have their device. They can just pull it out and start reading, so they really like that instant access. One of the students, as I mentioned, from Charter Oak, noted the environmental concerns, so they like the fact that there's no paper, no display issues. One of the students from UCLA said that it's a way to just continue getting more comfortable with the technology. We also asked some questions about print preference, and we asked this because there were some reasons that students noted that were drawbacks to using e-texts. One of the issues was eye fatigue or eye strain. Nearly a quarter indicated that they wanted to be able to take notes or highlight. They like that tactile sensation. They like the feel of the physical object. Also, about a fifth indicated they wanted to keep that physical book. And some just stated it's a personal preference. That's what they're used to. And as Rose noted in the last section, context can also be a big factor. So sometimes it just depends. And nearly 12% of the respondents indicated that context was important. So some of the themes that we saw emerge about print was that some students felt that the e-texts were prohibitively expensive because they couldn't afford another device to read the e-text on. They didn't like having to just rent the item. They liked to be able to keep the book. They also felt comfortable flipping or scrolling through a physical object, again, referring to that tactile sensation. Also, some students noted that the dependence on an electric source makes it difficult to take an e-book on a long camping trip. Where are you going to plug in or recharge your battery if you're out in the woods away from the electrical power grid? Again, the eye fatigue was an issue, and some of the students like to be able to keep the object, and some noted that working on devices can actually be a distraction because it's too easy to flip into other activities while you're on your e-device. So I'm now going to turn it over to George, and we have another poll here looking at video.
Tab over there. All right. Okay. Thank you. All right, so you've seen the first sort of three sections of our poll, and I'll talk to you about the results that we found for the last two sections. And just here, we're talking to people about, you know, what are they doing with video? What are they doing with their mobile? How do part-time students differ from full-time students? And so clearly we can see here that, you know, we're road warriors. We're here. You know, we take these devices with us. They're almost part of us. And so is that sort of our students' expectation, and is that their preference? So let's jump to the... All right, so when we look at video, what is video included? And I think we had to qualify it because it means different things to different people. So we talked about podcasts. We talked about CourseCast. We talked about links to alternative sites like TEDx and other things. We talked about content that might come in an EPAC. And so there's all sorts of content that can get pulled into your course, certainly from the publishers and other people. And so let's qualify what we're talking about. There we go. And so when we looked at this, we said, wow, our on-ground courses, these classroom courses, have a high percentage of video integrated into there. Some of this video, you know, the EPACs, the courses, the TEDx is in there. And then when you get to hybrid courses, it has less of a percent. When you get to these fully online courses where bandwidth is more restrictive, even less, right? But across the board, as we started trending this out, we could see that on average about 70% of all classes, right, across all institutions have some video integrated into each class. And so I think that's telling for us to explain to people, you know, we're going to need you to be able to consume device on a laptop or a desktop or a mobile device or in the classroom. And so we started talking to people. We said, well, what is this? What kind of videos are they? Is it meaningful? Is there any differences between the types of videos that our institutions are putting in there? And we said, yes, actually there is. When you're a research institution, 74% of your lectures are about your academic scholars. You're videotaping your staff, your academics, your scholars, your researchers, and you're putting them at the center of the movie. And when you get largely to teaching institutions, they're bringing in different types of content, whether it's publisher content or external content or other things. So it was interesting to see a very big trend in there. We also asked, hey, who's watching this? Because I've made course casts, and if I make a 30-minute lecture on Camtasia, it takes me an hour and a half to get that done, to record it and edit it, take out all the ahs and ums and other things. And so that's a lot of time and investment. So are people really watching it? And so what we found out was that 50% of all the students watch less than 25% of all the lectures, right? So more than every other student in your class isn't watching any of the video that you're putting up. And we'll come back to this because it's interesting. But 17%, let's call it 20%, they listen to almost everything you put online, right? So we've got this big cream of the crop, but most of the people are saying, yes, I know it's there, but I don't have the time, right? I'm not going to look at it. And so we said to people, where do you view this, right? And this is what Rose talked about before. And they're finding niche moments to look at this. It's on the bus. It's in the lab. It's in the calf. It's while they're doing something else, while they're eating, while they're driving, hopefully not. So they're finding all these little niche moments, these micro-learning moments to be able to consume the content that we're putting up there that we're calling video and audio streaming. So then we started to say to them, you know, is a mobile device really the right device? You know, it's great as a consumption device, but do you have bandwidth problems? Do you have connection problems? And what we saw back was, well, yeah, largely if I have to sit down and watch a video, I'm going to do it on my desktop or my laptop. My first choice device for watching video is going to be a full computer, right? Secondarily, I'm going to look at my tablet, and then after that, my smartphone. So still, students are going back and saying, you know, give me a full-fledged computer. That's part of the mobile spectrum, when I need to do these sort of high bandwidth moments. So we said we've got these two types, right? We've got the, you know, brilliant lecture, and we've got the TEDx integration. And so what's really out there for stuff, right? And we said 50% of all the, this is what students said, 50% of all the material that's posted out there in video is remedial. Okay, so this might be why 50% of the students decided that they don't want it. Right? They say, well, I don't need the remedial videos. I understood the concept the first time. At least they think they understood the concept the first time. The grade will tell, right? And then 60% said it's supplemental material, right? I'm able to take my lecture, my understanding to the next level at my discretion, right? So based on the time that I have, my preference, I'm able to say, okay, I want to go the next step. Let me keep consuming more information about this. And so I think that's very telling. So remember, 50% said that they don't watch any videos, yet of those people, 75% know that these videos would have a positive impact. Think about that. So they know they're there, they're choosing to not watch them, and they know that they would help them. That's interesting, right? Okay. So again, 70, 80% thought these online videos would be successful. We looked and we tried to see, you know, is there a break? The part-time students do something different with video than full-time students. There wasn't a big change, right? Part-time students have a deeper challenge. They consume less video than full-time students, but it's only by 5 points, right? It's not by a very big margin. So largely, and we'll come back to this, their profiles are very similar. If you look at full-time students, 55% leverage that, right? It's not a very big swing when we're talking about video. So this is the one that scared me most when we looked at this, right? I work as the CIO of my school, and so as part of that, we have a help desk. We spend a lot of money training staff, having a ticket system, buying tickets. And we said, hey, how do you get help, right? If you're going to get help for your device, how are you going to do this, right? And the number one thing people said is friends. They're going to go with friends, not the help desk, right? Not the guys that we're paying, not the guys we're training. They're going to go to the help desk. Then they're going to go to their instructor, right? That's a little depressing, right? Then they'll call someone else, but third, they'll call university tech support, right? So this is not helpful for me, right? This gives me the instructor, or it gives me their buddy, right? Neither of those are really our ideal first-tier tech support, correct? Right? He's not going to do much for us. He's not awake, but we're going to come back to that. So what were our takeaways, right? We said, hey, full-time students, they're doing a greater number of credits. They're spending more time engaging in their academic work because they're in more credits. And they're able to use these mobile devices in sort of this single pane of glass. And they like to do it, single pane of glass being the same tablet, but across many different apps. They're largely not talking about these single apps. They have different profiles and different identities for all these different things. And when they get tired of something, they hold the button down, it starts to jiggle, they nuke it, and that's it, it's gone. So it's very interesting to see how they're using this technology. So let's take a look. Our last section really tried to dig apart full-time and part-time and see if we could, you know, separate maybe road warriors from, you know, people who are going to be on campus and live in residence or largely be in one place for a large number of times, right? So we talked about full-time students. 60% of them had a laptop and 25% of them had a tablet. And we got a little deeper in this data and we sort of asked, are you looking to buy a tablet? And most people said, no, I'm waiting still, right? Right now I need one device. I need one productivity device and I don't have the money to buy two or three devices. I'm not getting reimbursed. Mom and dad aren't buying it. And so right now I need one device to get the most I can out of my investment, right? When we looked at full-time students, we said 89% had a smartphone. That, in both our data here, it equates perfectly to the consumer research trends that are out there, right? So we've always said, is higher ed different? Are we special? We love thinking we're special, and here we see no. Actually, if you look at what the consumerization numbers are for mobile, we're within a point of what the nation is for the consumption of mobile devices. Higher ed isn't any different in this niche, right? 70% are using these mobile devices to help access their academic life. And 34% spend more than 40 hours on a mobile device. So that's your laptop, your desktop, your smartphone. That's a lot of time that they're spending in front of a mobile device. That is a week? Per week. Thank you. And so again, we go to part-time students, and again, they're taking less credits, so they're spending less of a percentage of time. But this number also correlates, you know, sort of to where we thought we were going to get to. The one thing we thought that was a little bit different with mobile is that they were a group that actually carried two devices, right? There was a much higher percentage that the part-time students would have the laptop and the desktop, right? And they're really speaking to this convenience micro-learning. They want zero boot times. They want rapid access. And they're saying, great, I've got a tablet for, you know, when I'm sitting there. You know, my kid's at karate practice, and I've got a laptop for when I need to sit down and I need to do this thing. But at every moment, right, I'm going to move the ball down the field. It's going to be, you know, a 5-minute inch. It's going to be a 20-minute foot. It's going to be a, you know, 1-yard hour. But every moment, I'm going to move the academic ball down the thing, and these are my tools to do that. So we talked to students about what their perceptions were, right? What was their perceptions of mobile agility? And we said, gee, do we have a mobile-friendly website? And largely they said, yes, you do have a mobile-friendly website. You have done things to make your experience show up on my iPad or my tablet or my laptop. And if you're not here, students are screaming for this, right? So if you don't have a mobile-friendly website, you're clearly, and we'll get into the Gartner hype cycle, you're clearly in that laggard group, right? And so this is sort of priority number one. We talked to them, and this is a graph of all the data, but we'll call out three different facts. We asked them, what are the most important things that are out there? And they said to us, Wi-Fi, emergency alert, and course information. Those are their top three things, right? If you take nothing from this day, those are your three priorities when you get back to your campus. It's ubiquitous Wi-Fi, it's emergency alert services, and it's course information. And we talk about what are the things that mean the least to you, right? Kiosks. Social media, athletics. That may depend on whether you're a, you know, prominent D1 football school or not. But I don't know any of us here were a prominent D1 football school. I have an online college. We have a Madden group or something.
So we're doing pretty well.
Okay, so Rose is doing pretty well. So when we talked to them about the satisfaction, they said, here we go, 92%. This is the most important thing is ubiquitous Wi-Fi. I must have it, right? And then it was course information and other things. Some of the unexpected takeaways that we got, students pay a ton more money than we expected. I think often I sit in meetings, you all sit in meetings, and we talk about how much books cost. We talk about technology fees. Can we bring a student to bear on this? And I've got a slide, you'll see it in a second. Our students, my students, spend more than $300 per semester on wireless, right? That's their mobile device. That's a semester. And so you look at that and you say, wow, well, so how does that factor in comparison to, you know, we're killing ourselves to get a textbook, you know, between from $80 to $50, and these guys are out there and we're spending $300 a semester on wireless, right? I think we saw a lot of students like short videos, right? We like short videos too, right? You open up a link and you see 45 minutes and instantly you know where you're going to be for the next 35 minutes, right? And then you open up and you see an M4V and you say, oh, 4 minutes? I got 4 minutes. I can do that. Again, everything we saw started trending towards these shorter, smaller, micro-learning moments. More moments at a shorter frequency. We talked about wireless. We did a nice, I thought this was one of the better things we did. We took all the data, we took five facts, and we tried to overlay part-time and full-time students. Because we kept fighting with our part-time students really different. And so if you look at the red is the part-time students and the blue is the full-time students, we talked about how they're using their devices, how they're using it across their academic life, how many hours they're on there. And I think the real positive side for the people in this room is that there's a very good overlap. It's not a radically different population, right? The part-timers have a few more laptops. They spend less time academically. The full-timers spend more time academically, and they're doing more with a mobile laptop. But all in all, I think that's what we expected. And because they're not divergent, we're able to kind of, you know, keep our costs at least in the same profile. So here's our profile student, right? We've seen her before, and she looks harmless, right? She's a nice student, could be on any of our campuses. She grew up as a digital native, right? So she's had this for life, and she's got this backpack over her shoulder, and you take it apart, she's consuming five different IP addresses. Right? And so as we talk about ubiquitous Wi-Fi, it's not about doing what you did last year. Right? That'd be easy. We could do what we did last year. We have to do what we did last year plus another 30 or 40% for all the other devices they're going to start carrying. And so I think that's one of the challenges that people haven't seen, is that it's not just growth in number of access points. It's density within the same user. And I think this is a very telling screen. We talked about this 300 per semester. One of the things we saw when we were talking about campus apps was that students are very eco-friendly. Now, maybe if you go to a college and your logo is a Charter Oak tree, you're more paper savvy, but I don't know. But we said to people, they said, we're more, you know, green. And so if you've got a way, an app for your campus app, and we can take a picture of this garbage can, and we can tell you it's full, and you have a way to catch that and fix that, well, we'll do that with garbage cans, we'll do it with potholes, we'll do it wherever we see a problem. We're willing to invest in the campus. We're willing to help you if you make it convenient for us to help you. And so lots of people are talking about doing some kind of social goodness through their mobile app. How can we help the campus fix parts of the campus? We talked about people wanting the Nook, and what they're really starting to say is, I want to reduce my carbon footprint, right? I don't want to print all these things out. I don't want to print them out again when I get a revised set of slides or things like that. I want to carry them with me digitally. Help me reduce my carbon footprint. I'm socially conscious. And certainly they don't care whether they're in a basement classroom, in the library, in the cafeteria, or out in a quad outside, right? Ubiquitous Wi-Fi is everything that they're talking about. And then one of the last things we saw was that mobile device support is critical. And MIT has a great mobile device website. They did a presentation and an event I helped sponsor. And what they've done, and we talk about your friend is going to help you, they've created this entire online portal. And they've got how to Droid hooks up and how to iPhone 4 and then the iPhone 4S and the 5 and the 5S. And they have literally broken down screens for every single phone. And so if you've got a buddy and he's going to be your first tier tech support, well, here's a way to give your buddy the best support he can get, right? It's university authored. It's university sponsored. It's about training and material creation. It's not about having a bigger help desk, having your help desk do better. They're going to call their friends, and this is a way that we can help support them. Almost out of time. All right, so we said everything was connected to mobility. As we talk to students, it's basically their mobile device serves as a blank chalkboard, right? And so the upside is that there's an app for that. And so we look at this as a blank slate, and we've talked to people, and they said, hey, we've got our university app. We have an SDK. You can write. You can spin off. We've got sponsored programs to help you learn how to become developers. And as we talk to people, all those things were important things in their economy. They are part of this living, breathing mobile space. And so we'd encourage you, let them be part of your living, breathing mobile space. Don't shut them out. Bring them in through ideas and creations. Have them build apps. Have them have contests. And we've heard some universities have even started selling their apps externally. It's a consumer-driven market, right? That's what we've learned. If you don't believe this, check out what happened on your campus WAN on this day, right? iOS 7 comes out, and everybody tries to download it at 1 o'clock Eastern time at our place, right? And instantly, the pipe overflowed. The firewall started to saturate, right? And we couldn't take it. So if people say to you, no, we're higher ed, we're not driven by this consumer mentality, tell them to go back and look at this, right? And that's going to prove. They didn't ask, you know, is this going to break our wireless network? They didn't ask, is this going to have an impact on what I'm doing? Is this going to impact my ability to log in a Blackboard or Desire Learn's mobile app? They said, nope, it's the new thing, and I've got to have it today. And then I can start blogging about it and Instagramming about it today. And so they were out there, and they do this. So basically, we serve as their digital canvas, and it's our job to kind of allow them to come and paint and draw and work with us. And with that, we'll take questions if we've got time. We've got 8 minutes.
Okay. I have a question. In the e-text portion of your study, did you ask the users about interactive functionality and what types of, other than bookmarking and searching?
No, we didn't. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and we realized there are a lot of things we would have asked differently. Unfortunately, that wasn't one we explicitly asked about.
Thank you.
And okay. For other questions, if you can come to the mic so we can allow our online audience to hear.
So during your survey, did you incorporate any questions about geospatial space awareness or presence in your mobile app?
We did ask a few questions surrounding some services that are sort of part of the standard campus MDOTs or apps that are in the stores. Around, we did ask about the bus. We did ask about the map, of course. We didn't get into those as a category, but we did have that screen that showed, and it was still important to them, but it didn't rank quite as high as those other three. But I think for those on campus, and I think especially it's if you ask that right after orientation. So we did this survey, mostly it was in the winter. So I bet you if we had done it in like October, would have been more people saying, that was really important, I had to find my classroom. But so I think that that's something that they use less and less as they get comfortable in the environment. And I do think right as they get to campus, it's a critical piece.
This is a speculative question. The kids who are growing up today, so I'm talking, for example, high school as well, they're more attuned and more involved in using mobile device. Do you think that your results would change if, for example, that same cohort were to be attending university? I hope that makes sense.
In other words, if we did this year over year, would this change, this
yes,
data?
Exactly.
Absolutely. I actually was thinking that it's just going, I think it's a pretty steep curve that it's changing on as far as just expecting to leverage it. Has anyone seen Steve DeFilippo walking around with his Google Glass? Because
yes.
He's all about those things. He'll give you a demo if you want. I don't know how many. I think they're geeky. I'm not going to be walking around with them, but a lot of people probably are. I mean, I think that the devices, the browser on the watch, that's what I think is a huge trend coming our way. But I think that the kids in high school now are going to keep driving everything, and the kids that are in grade school now, like my kids, it's just another level. At about 2, my son could swipe.
So how do we as a university, or even for the librarian, because that's what I am, how do we prepare for that?
Well, I think, I don't know if you had a chance to go to any gamification sessions here, but I do think so that's part of the problem is that it's not really part of the problem. It's part of the environment that's changing, and that's to say that they're getting very comfortable with technology, and they enjoy it. And I think they're looking for opportunities to use an environment they're comfortable with for their learning as well. I hope that helps.
Hello, I'm Jorge from a university in Mexico, and I have a question. If you ask the students where they like to watch the videos, because, you know, in our university, if you want to contact the students, If you gave them an email, they'll see it like in 2 or 3 hours. But if you put it in Facebook, they'll see it like in 2 minutes. Then if you ask the students, they like to watch the videos on our Blackboard or in Facebook, if you ask that in your study.
You know, we didn't touch on social media, except We asked several questions about did they use their devices for social media, and they definitely do, but we didn't intertwine that with communications for the university. And I think that, I do think you're correct that that sort of filtered news channel is evolving, and I think that it's interesting. But I also think that it's, you cannot, at least in California, you cannot demand that all students have a Facebook account, and so you have that percentage of students that if you put it on Facebook, you're just not going to reach them. So I think you have to do both.
I ditched the traditional campus LMS to bring my class on the Facebook about 2 years ago, and so I thought we'd do micro lectures, and I did a presentation on this here, I think, 2 years ago, and it was great. For the first, every day I was putting 5 minutes worth of either video or an update or whatever, and so, you know, everybody was real gung-ho by week one or two or three, and then after that, you know, I'm doing surveys along the way to see what the acceptance is. They said, get away. You know, this is my space. Facebook is for me, and you're my teacher, and I don't want you to be in my space, right? And so I think that that's the challenge. I think it sounds good until you start seeing a faculty member's post two or three times a day for micro learning, which is great, and we had our own class and it was closed off, but eventually the student said, no, I want to chat with my buddies, I want to take a picture of the espresso I just drank, and then, you know, 4 minutes later it's mostly gone. I don't want you on here.
They felt, we decided actually consciously that there's a little bit of a creep factor with of your instructors and students engaging in that area, and that we weren't going to focus on it. But I do think it's going to evolve, and perhaps there'll be two different channels on Facebook or something like that, but maybe LinkedIn and Facebook, I don't know. So, but I understand what you're saying, and yet it's not ubiquitous, so it's a difficult thing.
Hi, Eric Cunnan from Grand Valley State University. Thank you for your session. I was just wondering, based on all the data that you've collected, how do you think in terms of bringing that back to your campuses locally to inform strategy or to advance this whole mobile initiative on your campuses? And what does that look like? What are your priorities? And knowing some of this information that you do now, what are you going to do next with the data?
Okay, thank you. We actually thought about that, and I'll let Diane
answer. One of the slides we had up there talked about the shorter videos, and that actually came from our colleague Andy. They're incorporating that at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, that they have consciously decided they're going to use shorter videos because, as you saw, they're not going to watch longer videos.
Right. And I think, I guess from my perspective, there's lots of vendors here, and they want to sell us lots of six-figure solutions, right, that are hardware and software and other things. This will be our last question, right? And those are great solutions, and they've got a place, but I don't know that students are arguing about whether they've got 720p or 1080p, right? But the vendors tell us, oh, no, we've got to have these new cameras, and we've got to have these new codecs, and we've got to have whatever. And the students are saying, no, I'm willing to do a Vine video, you know, do 7-second shot on your phone. So I think, you know, what we hear from the corporate IT side, from the sales reps, is no, you've got to have high-end enterprise class and whatever. And what the students are saying to us is, no, I'll take grassroots, poorly cobbled together. Give me the information in a way that I want it. So, I mean, it's a very refreshing way, and I think that's part of what, you know, we were looking at. And you say, well, wow, I'll dump $100,000 in mics that hang out of the ceiling and cameras in the back that follow the professor. And the students are saying, but I need Wi-Fi. Just take all that money and buy more wireless access points, and I'll be the happiest guy. I don't need this. I don't need 5 labs. I don't need, you know, this room that calls this other room across campus. Just let me have wireless across campus. So for me, that was the biggest takeaway. It was, hey, you know, stop listening to the vendors. Not that they don't have value, but start really listening to the students and really, you know, take that brutally honest feedback and keep hammering it.
Yeah, I'll say at UCLA, we had the online poll tool that we built, and then we realized wireless in some of our classrooms was not consistent and difficult. So, you know, sometimes you get a little ahead of where you want to be delivering solutions for your students that are free to them effectively. And the problem is sometimes there's something that it depends on to be delivered, and that is a missing link. So, you know, for us, we're trying to figure out, you know, how to get that up to speed. The other thing is that it really sort of weighed on me, the whole it depends, because if your faculty aren't thinking about how to build this into the lectures, then it's going to not be engaging and not be used appropriately. So a lot of things are how do you better communicate the types of strategies that you're affecting and get them to leverage them appropriately so that the students have the tools or and can, you know, interact with their curriculum.
Okay, we're at time, and please fill out your evaluations online for this session and join me in thanking our presenters for sharing.